So after a long break, I want to go back to Shema. We're still in Menhagim of Tefillah. So we left off in the middle of discussing the Menhagim of Shema. I don't remember exactly where we left off, but I think I know where we left off. So we'll try to start over there. But we discussed the obligation of Shema in terms of, is it an obligation on women versus men? So we said men are obligated. And women are not, but they're advised to say Shema because it's so important. It's such a foundation of our Amunah. Women are certainly advised to say Shema daily, despite the fact that it's time-bound and not an obligation upon women. The halacha is you must have kavana in the first line of Shema to be able to say the mitzvah. So even if you say the words, you don't know what they mean, you haven't done your mitzvah, you have to know those words mean. I want to go through, if not tonight, next week, more of the translation and understanding of Shema, because once you have the opportunity, it's important to do it and to understand more about what it means, what each line means, why it's so important. So I want to get to that. Before we get to that, I do want to go through some of the minhagim and practice of how to say Shema. The way I want to do it is I want to do it from the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah. So I'm going to read to you different passages from Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah to go through what are the minhagim of saying Shema, ways it's said, you know, covering the eyes, etc., things that we do. And that'll help us understand the meaning behind Shema as well. So right now I'm reading from the Shulchan Aruch Simen Samech Aleph in Or Chaim. And the first thing the Shulchan Aruch says is Yikra Kriya Shema Bekavana Be'ema Be'yir Bres V'zeya. One should read Shema with Kavana, with Ema, with trepidation, with fear, with trembling. And add in your own synonyms. But basically, you say Shema with a lot of reverence and fear and trepidation and trembling. The reason for that is that Shema is our Kabbalah's Omachus Shemaim. Shema is referred to and understood to be the way we accept Hashem's Machus upon ourselves. So when you're accepting the Melech as your Melech, then you have to feel that, you know, in your bones. You have to really feel that in who you are. So Shema, it's halacha brought down, Shema should be read with the emotion. Not easy to do, very hard to do, but that's the emotion you're going for on the first line of Shema. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a very interesting passage. He quotes from El Yeraba, but really it's sourced in Yerushalmi. And he actually says that within the Kriya Shema, you have a remez to all Aseres HaDibros. There are some Sidurim I've seen that actually have it notated, you know, in the margins. They don't all have it in that way, but certain Sidurim you look at, they'll have a little parentheses or a little note showing where these Ramazim are. I'll tell you in a second what they are, but all 10 Dibros do have some sort of remez in Kriya Shema. What that means to us is that Kriya Shema is so fundamental. We know that Aseres HaDibros are considered fundamental as well. So if Aseres HaDibros are fundamental mitzvahs, and Kriya Shema is the fundamental declaration we have as Jews, so they're going to connect one way or the other, because this is the foundation of what it is to be a Jew. So where are the references? So some are more direct than others. When we say... Let me find it. So Hashem Elokeinu is a remes, the first and second debros, Nochi Shem Lokecha. Hashem our God, Nochi Shem Lokecha, I am Hashem your God. That's a pretty direct link. When we say Hashem Echad, Hashem is one, that's a reference to the second of the second debros, Lo Yelecha, don't have any idols, no other gods, Avodah Zarah, Hashem is one, to the exclusion of anything else. The V'ahavta, that you should love Hashem, so that's a remes, he says, to Lo Sisa, not to take Hashem's name in vain. Why? Because Manda Rachim Lamalka, if you care, if you love the king, you're not going to swear in his name falsely. Lo Sisa Hashem Hashav primarily refers to taking Hashem's name in a false shua, false oath. So if you respect the king and you love the king, you're not going to just toss around his name in falsehoods, because that's not showing your love for the king. So he says that V'ahavta is actually a remez not to take Hashem's name in vain, because you wouldn't swear falsely in the name of someone you love. When it says Uchsavtam al mezuzas besecha v'sherecha, you should write it on the doors of your house and on your gates. So that is a remez to lo sachmod, not to be jealous of another, because it says in the Sefer Devaros lo sachmod beis re'echa. So that it's talking about houses. Don't be jealous of your neighbor's house, and mezuzah is on your house. He then says v'safta diganecha, says you should gather in your grains. So that is a remez to lo signov, that you shouldn't steal, because it's your grain, but not someone else's grain. So lo signov is not to steal. Vasaf dignecha is gather in only your own grains. Don't gather in someone else's grain. Vavadta mehera, it says if we don't keep the Torah, it says in the Shema that we will be destroyed quickly, chas v'shalom. And that is a remez to lo sirtzach, not to murder. Because if it says man the katal is katal, somebody who is a murderer gets killed. So it says we are being destroyed. Part of the destruction is based on murderous behaviors. Leman yirbu yamechem, it says in Shema that you shall have lengthy days. That's a remnant to kibud av ve'em, because the reward of kibud av ve'em is leman yirichu yamecha, it says in the Torah, you get lengthy days. So the lengthy days in Shema refer to kibud av ve'em. It says lusa sura acharei levavchem acharei nechem, you shouldn't follow after your eyes. That's a remnant to lasinah, to adultery, someone being attracted to another and following their eyes. Leman tizkaru, so you should remember and do the mitzvos. That's a remnant to Shabbos, because the mitzvah is Zachur Asim HaShabbos, remember Shabbos. Leman tizkaru, remember the mitzvos, Zachur, remember Shabbos. And then, we know Shabbos actually is weighted, Keneged Kol Torah Kula. Shabbos itself represents all the mitzvos, so it ties into that. And then it says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God, at the end of Shema, that's a remnant to Lasan Ebreachad Shokir, not to testify falsely. So I am Hashem your God, so that therefore, I'm always there watching what you say. Don't testify falsely. That is fear of Hashem. So some of them are more direct, some are less direct, as I said. But there is a remez brought down from very early sources that Shema is going to be remez to all these sorts of dibros. And therefore, the Mishnah Berurah concludes, Sarach Adam Lisbonim Bahem Be'esam Yos Krishma. When you say Shema, you really should think about the Aseret Dibros as well, so that you don't violate any of them. Meaning, since Shema is the time where you're accepting upon yourself Hashem's authority, and therefore you're committing yourself to serve Hashem properly, you want to keep in mind all those important mitzvahs so you kind of translate that into action. And that's the Mishnah Berurah's directive in Pansayang Shema. Furthermore, when it says in the Shulchan Aruch, you should say Shema with fear, with trepidation, so it says this is part of the concept. When you say Shema, you're supposed to be Mekabel Malchus Shemayim, accept Hashem's authority, His Malchus, Lios Nera al Kiddush Hashem Yuchad, that we would even devote ourselves to being killed al Kiddush Hashem Chas V'Shalom if that was necessary. And that's part of what you're supposed to think when you say B'chol Nafshecha, with all of your soul. That's one of the sources that we are mechuyev to give up our lives for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we're called upon in that way, Chas V'Shalom. But Shema is a moment where you're saying, I'm willing to give up everything for Hashem. B'chol Nafshecha, even my life. Baruch Hashem, we're not faced that challenge, we hope, and that's not something that comes up too often in our modern day life here in America, Baruch Hashem. It's not always like that in Jewish history, but it has been that way. But the Bali Musar point out that there is an application of this which is very relevant to us. I mean, many of us, we can say Shema, and hopefully we can think in our minds, Hashem, if I was called upon to give up my life, I would. But that same person who's committed to giving up his or her life, Al Kiddush Hashem, Chas V'Shalom, are willing to commit to Hashem to give up something while we're alive. Meaning, will I say Hashem, therefore I'm not going to say Lashon Hara today? Am I willing to be most nefesh for that? Hashem, therefore I'm not going to lash out at my friend who bothered me. Hashem, I'm willing to give up extra mitzvah tzedakah when I'm asked. Like, are those things we're willing to commit to? So we're saying, okay, I'm ready to jump in the fire, okay, Kiddush Hashem. That I'm ready to do. But the whole back of Lashon Hara, that I'm not so sure about. So it sounds silly, but sometimes what we do in our lifetime is more difficult than giving up our lives, because we're still here, and we have to live with it, and we have to have self-control. Self-control at times can be more difficult than Chas V'Shalom, giving it all. And it's a funny thought, but it's reality in our lives. So Bali Musar say, when you're saying Shema, forget about the jumping into the fire of Kiddush Hashem. If that happens, Chas V'Shalom, hopefully we can live up to the challenge. But think about something in your own life which is a challenge you have, which is difficult, and say, Hashem, I'm willing to be moser nefesh. I'm willing to sacrifice of myself. Not sacrifice myself, but sacrifice of myself for this purpose. And if you can say that, that in some ways is a greater commitment to Hashem than the thought, I'll jump in the fire, I'll kiddush Hashem. So that's how the Bali Musar take it, and it's much more practical for us. Now the Baal Tanya, he famously writes that we've seen historically that even those Jews who weren't all that observant in their lifetime, they gave their lives to Kiddush Hashem. When they were told, okay, bow down to the cross or die, even Jews who necessarily weren't necessarily so Shomer Shabbos, weren't so from, but they gave up their lives. That's a historical fact. And Baal Tanya says, because every Jew has within his or herself this idea of Mesiras Nefesh. But in our lifetime, to say, I'm going to give up something, that's hard. That's much more difficult. So therefore, if we want to be more practical in Shema, let's think about when we say Shema, I'm going to give up something of, a sacrifice of myself for Hashem in my lifetime. So that's a thought we should have. I think a very important thought we should have. That's the first point here. He says, Nohagin l'kos pasuk rishon mekol ram pe'or kavana. You're supposed to say the first pasuk, or the minhag is to say the first pasuk out loud to inspire kavana. So even though the rest of davening, you know, we usually recite from an undertone, no, usually people say Shema, Shema, they say it much louder. And the source for that is because you want to be able to inspire more kavana. So often we say something out loud inspires more kavana within ourselves. So saying it out loud is a tool. That's not a chiyuv, it's a minhag, but it's a tool that we have to inspire more kavana. We have this minhag of putting our hands over our face when saying the first pasuk. So this is something actually sourced in the Gemara. It says that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he would say Shema, he would run his hand over his face. The Gemara actually has a source of such a thing. And that's the minhag. And the Shulchan Aruch says why? Very simply, he says, because we should be distracted. We shouldn't look around at anything else that would hold us back from having kavana. So a simple reason for this would be not, you know, that we should not be distracted by anything. The simple reason. So technically, closing your eyes like this would be the same thing. As long as you're not distracted, you're not distracted. The Mishnah Berurah brings down the minhag is to use your right hand. He says the right hand should be the proper minhag. He has a source for that. But that's a simple reason. Now, there are some deep reasons for this as well, besides not being distracted. So one of them is based on what we were saying before. Part of Kriya Shema is the ability to say, I'm Moser Nefesh HaKadosh Hashem. I'm willing to give up my life for Hashem. We know that Chazal teach us that a suma is kames. Someone who's blind is equivalent to being a mes, equivalent to being dead. There's reasons why that is, but at least, you know, in concept, blindness is compared with death. So therefore, if we're talking about Hashem and saying, Hashem, I'll give my life, we actually do a motion to, you know, cut off our eyesight for that moment to sort of simulate death. Sounds a little funny the way we're saying it, but we're simulating those moments of Mesiras Nefesh, what we're doing. And therefore, besides just devoting myself to Hashem, I'm also showing Hashem, right now, at this moment, I'm actually doing an act of Mesiras Nefesh. So that's one deeper reason given. Another deep reason given is really based on the meaning of Shema, which I want to get into more. But simply, Shema, when you say Hashem Echad, so part of it, Hashem Echad has many different, you know, elements to it. So the simple understanding of Hashem Echad is Hashem is the only God, there's no other gods. Hashem Echad can mean Hashem himself is one, he has no parts. Hashem is one unit. But also Hashem Echad can mean Hashem is the only thing in existence. Hashem is the only one, meaning that nothing else in the world exists. In a deep level, that's the truth. I mean, it's something that we don't fully fathom, but on a deep level, you know, it's something that more of a Kabbalah Sfarim talk about, Eino Mavado, all there is Hashem. And nothing else really exists in this world. So even though maybe we're not holding it that deep understanding of Hashem, there's nothing else out there besides Hashem. But when you cover your eyes, what you're doing is you're creating your own non-existence. Even I'm not here either. You know, I'm saying Hashem is one, and I'm non-existent. No, I'm nothing. I'm nothing in Hashem's presence. I'm a zero. And that's part of Kriya Shema as well. Baruch Shem is actually the opposite of that, which I'll talk about more. Baruch Shem is saying, no, I do exist, and I'm here to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Shema Yisrael is saying that Hashem is it, and there's nothing else. There's not me, and there's nothing. It's just Hashem, Hashem's greatness, Hashem's life, Hashem's, you know, the life He gives the world, all Hashem. And that's it. So you cover your eyes, it's your own act of displaying your non-existence. It's another deeper understanding of covering your eyes at Shema. There is a minhag that some have, I've seen among Sephardim mostly, that they cover their eyes with their three middle fingers to form a shin, and then the thumb will be like a Dawud, and the pinky like a Yud. And it says the name Shakai. So I think Ashkenazim, I don't think, have such a minhag, but I think some Sephardim do. So they'll kind of do it like this instead of like this, and that will represent the same Shakai when they cover their face. So that's the minhag which is out there. But you know, I think that the typical way Ashkenazim do it is covering their eyes normally. I think that's fine for us. But there is a minhag to cover it, you know, with the three fingers and try to form Shakai with your hand in that manner. The Shulchan Aruch says further that when you recite Shema, so you should lengthen the Ches, and you should also lengthen the Dalet. So it's funny, if you sit there and shul and listen, you'll hear all sorts of different combinations of people saying Shema, all these things. And there certainly is sources for, it's a Gemara, that you should be Marech, that you should actually lengthen those letters. the question is, number one, practically, how do you do it that it sounds normal? I mean, if you mess up the word, you're also having the mitzvah either. If word becomes some, like, you know, weird combination of doesn't you're not saying Hashem is one, you're saying Hashem is blah, you know, that's all you're saying. So you have to say it right. On the other hand, if the halacha is to marach beches, you want to lengthen it to some degree. So the before I tell you how I think it should be done, just understand the idea. When it says you're marach beches, when you lengthen the ches, so the Shulchan Aruch says, what are you supposed to be thinking as you lengthen the ches? You should be thinking that Hashem... The Gemara says, and Shulchan Aruch quotes, that you should say it as long as it takes you to coronate Hashem as the king over the Shemayim and the Aretz. So you should be able to think in your head as you say the letter Ches, that Hashem is the king over the Shemayim and the Aretz. Now why the Ches? Because the Ches is Gematria 8, and it's a reference to the seven levels of Shemayim plus the earth. So that's actually a tool to help us remember what we think about. So you say Ches, you think in your head, seven levels of Shemayim and earth, and Hashem is the king over it all. That's the Ches. The way it's written in the script in the Sefer Torah also is that the Ches basically, it's like a vav, a backwards vav, and there's like a sort of like a triangle on top. So that triangle is pointing upwards. And the Shulchan Aruch says that triangle in the middle pointing upwards, that's a remez that Hashem is the king over the seven heavens and the earth. So if you picture the actual letter Ches, you also get that as well. So the letter Ches itself gives you sort of like the clue as to what you're supposed to think about when you say it. So that's the Ches. And then the Dalet is supposed to represent the four directions of the earth. So you have the seven levels of Shemayim, and the earth is the Ches, and Dalet is the four directions of the earth, north, south, east, and west. So you should, when you say Dalet, also you're supposed to think about that Hashem is the Yachid Bolamo, he's the only one, and he rules over the Dalet Ruchos Olam, the four different parts of directions of the earth. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, and don't go any longer than that. Stop right there. Lo yarech yosur mishirzeh. That's as far as you should go. And then the reason would be because if you do it too long, it won't sound any more like a Dalet. So there's also a concept that you should stress the Dalet, Echad, stress it, because you don't want it to sound like Acher. Acher would be like Hashem is another, like Avodah Zarah Chas V'Shalom. So you want to stress it's Echad. Now in the Sefer Torah, there is a pasuk, Lo Sishtachel El Acher, don't bow down to another God, and that's Acher. Pasuk Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. And in the Sefer Torah, the Dalet is enlarged, and the Resh is enlarged, and it's Psukim, so it's clear what they mean. Hashem is one, and there's other El Acher is Avodah Zarah. That's clear in the Torah. So we want to be able to stress that as we say it. So the Echad, you want to make your Ches a little bit long, so you say Echad, and you can think about the seven heavens and the earth, and the Dalet to think about the four directions of the earth. This is one place where some people say that maybe the pronunciation done by the Yemenites is more accurate, because they say Dalet more like a th, like we say in English, like the. So that's how they say it. And that you can actually lengthen in a way which sounds normal. Echad, you could say it that way. And it's very hard to lengthen a Dalet. Echad, it stops. So you can practice, you can try. I think it's better to say it shorter and more accurate to the pronunciation than try to lengthen it out and mess up how it sounds. Because if you don't think these things, you've done your mitzvah. If you say the word wrong, you haven't done your mitzvah. So you should try to lengthen it, but not in a way that it won't sound like the word Echad. Once it becomes a jumble of sounds, then it's not, you're not doing mitzvah anymore. So that's Hashem Echad. So I think Echad, that's, you know, something like that. That's a little bit longer. It gives you a little time to think, and you've stressed your Dalet. If you go Echad, then you've already messed the word up also. You know, I've heard certain people say Echad, but that's not the word either. It's Echad. So you want to make sure you say it the right way. So I'm confusing you how to say it, but bottom line, say it in a way which actually sounds like Echad, and don't mess the word up. That's what we're trying to do. But as you say it, think about Hashem being the king over the seven levels of Shemayim, the earth, and the four different directions of the earth. That's our goal there. Shulchan Aruch quotes another minhag. He says that some of the minhag, as they say Echad, that they motion with their head based on their thoughts. I mean, you're thinking Hashem is the king over the heavens, so you go like that. Earth, like that. And then you go around the four parts of the earth. It's like you're doing a stretch or something.
Right? Says that?
Shulchan Aruch says it. Yeah. He says, Yeshu Hagen, there's a minhag like that. From the Shulchan Aruch.
Okay, well done.
So if you get too dizzy, it's also not a good idea. So there's a minute like that. And the point of that also is that all these things sort of help you to focus in on what you're trying to be mechaven for. So the goal is the kavana. You know, the image of the ches being 8 and the dal being 4, the lengthening of them, the head motion, those are all trying to focus you in on the point. So the ikar thing is the point. If these other things help you and bring it out, that's why the minhagim are two such things. But you're taking with your head up and down, and then east, north, west, south, Mishnah Berurah says. Sorry, we're facing east, I guess. So east, north, west, whatever it is, southwest, whatever it is. But
people really do that.
That's done. I've seen it done. It's the Shulchan Aruch. He does say it's a minhag. So. But he does say, be very careful not to do what east, west, north, south, because that resembles the cross, the Shesi Be'erev. So, you know, like the Christians will do like whatever they do, their crosses, things like that. So he says, whatever you do, don't do it in the way that resembles the Shesi Be'erev. That's what he says, the cross. So any other direction is okay. But I guess the back forth like this would be the problem. So that's the minhag of how to say Shema. The next Shulchan Aruch says you should not lengthen the Aleph. The Aleph should be said normal, and the Ches you shouldn't say. You have to be sure you pronounce the Nekudos. I mean, if you were to say Echad and not pronounce the proper the Kamatz there, you've also messed up the word. So in Shema, being that this is a mitzvah deraisa and it's so important, you want to be sure you pronounce the letters correctly. So the Aleph should not be lengthened, and the Ches you shouldn't do too quick. You should do it at the right pace. I'm sort of picking out different points over here, but he says next, I'm skipping a few points. He says after the first pasuk of Shema, so then we say Baruch Shem Kol Melechus Shalom Ve'ed. You say it quietly. Now, why do you say it quietly? So this is based on a Gemara. The Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim that Yaakov Avinu was on his deathbed in Parshas Vayechi, and he called together his children. He wanted to reveal to them the Ketz, the time Mashiach is going to come. It says that Yaakov lost the Ruach HaKodesh, and Hashem didn't allow him to reveal the date. So he got nervous. Yaakov got nervous at that point. He says, how come I had Ruach HaKodesh until now? That all my sons come next to my bed and I lose it. Must be they have a problem. Or it must be my kids have some sort of issue. When they come next to my bed, I lose Ruach HaKodesh. So he says to the kids, to the Shvatim, to his 12 sons, maybe one of you is not worthy. Maybe one of you is not doing the right things. And therefore, I've lost the Schos Ruach HaKodesh from your memory because one of you is not acting appropriately. So they all, Pasuk Kulam, all the children, all the sons, opened their mouths, and they said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. They said, Shema Yisrael. Referring Shema Yisrael there to Yisrael Saba, to Yaakov Avinu, whose name was Yisrael. So they said, listen, Abba, Hashem is one. So they said, you're wrong. You know, everybody, all 12 Shvatim are Tzadikim. There's nobody here acting inappropriately. So Yaakov then said, Baruch Shem Kol Melechus Shalom Ve'ed. Yaakov responded with Baruch Shem. Baruch Shem is not a pasuk. Baruch Shem is not in the Torah. It's not a Navi. It's not a pasuk. Baruch Shem is sourced in the Gemara. But Yaakov responded to his kids, Baruch Shem. And the Rabbanan then said, well, what do we do? Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah didn't say Baruch Shem. Yaakov Avinu said Baruch Shem. So if we don't say it, we're not following Yaakov. If we do say it, we're not following Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah. So what do? We say it quietly. That's the Gemara says, and that's a hecker. That's the way that we symbolize that it's not a pasuk in the Torah. We're saying it because Yaakov said it. So that's the Gemara. The question is, well, what's the meaning of this Gemara? I mean, it's this story is an interesting story, but what's the meaning that okay, we say it quietly, not out loud. Yaakov said it, Moshe didn't say it. I mean, what exactly is the point? And also, we all know that on Yom Kippur we do say it out loud. The minhag is in Yom Kippur we do say Baruch Shem out loud. So why is Yom Kippur different? So this is really based on, I think, on a deeper idea, which is really, it really points to the meaning of what Baruch Shem is. So we'll go into this for now, and we'll do more next week. But you know, the Shema Yisrael, as I mentioned before, Shema Yisrael is the declaration that Hashem is one. I mean, Hashem is it. Hashem is everything. There's nothing else. It's all Hashem. Nothing else matters. Nothing else exists. Hashem is one. The Zohar calls that the Yichuda Ilah. It's the upper unification of Hashem. I mean, from the highest perspective, that's all there. All there is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then Baruch Shem is called the Yichuda Tasas. It's the lower unification of Hashem. It's proclaiming Hashem's unity from our world. Meaning what? From our perspective, we do exist. There's a world here. There's tables, there's chairs, there's a house, there's cars. I mean, there's a world. And for us to say, oh, and there's nothing but Hashem, I mean, that's, even though we might say, oh, maybe that's conceptually, there's some truth to that, there is truth to that, but we have no connection with it. We can't understand that. We all exist and we lead lives and we live in a world. Baruch Shem Kol Machzav Ed is that, no, from our perspective, Hashem, we do exist. Hashem is our king. A king needs subjects. A king needs people to rule over. So there are people, and there are lives, and we have a purpose in this world, and we subjugate ourselves towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's very different than saying there's nothing besides Hashem. It's a very different declaration. One is that Hashem is everything and I'm nothing. One is that, no, I'm a subject, I exist, I have a tachlis in life, and I am a subject of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So Baruch Shem is proclaiming the fact that we all have, we are all subjects in a Kodesh Baruch Hu's malchus. Hashem is the king, and we are members of his kingdom, and we're here to serve him. Shema is proclaiming that Hashem is everything and there's nothing else. Inam levado. That's what Shema is proclaiming. So when you proclaim Baruch Shem Kol Malchus Olam Ve'ed, what you are saying in effect is that I am a subject of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's my melech, I'm his subject, and I'm committed to doing his will. Now that declaration is very important, but we're a little bit ashamed of it, because are we living up to our job? Are we really living up to our purpose as being Hashem's servants? We try, we do our best, but are we truly fulfilling that role? So during the year, we say it, but we say it a little under our breath, because you know it's hard. We have our own challenges. On Yom Kippur, when you're standing there, similar to a malach, you know you've done tshuva, Hashem is giving you a clean slate. On Yom Kippur, you could proclaim loud and clear, Hashem, I am your Eved, you're my master, I can serve you 100%. That's the only day that we can say such a thing out loud and clear. The rest of the year, we can't say that. We have to keep it a little undertone, because it's a decoration which is something which we don't always live up to. And it's showing a little bit of shame. It's interesting, because the Gemara gives an interesting mashal. I never fully got the connection. I'll tell you the mashal. The Gemara says it's similar to a princess who, she's sitting in her room, and she smells the tzike kadera, it's called. You know, you make your cholent, and then on the bottom of the pot, there's this, like, crusty stuff, you know, that burns in the bottom. So she really likes the crusty stuff in the bottom, this princess. She's embarrassed, because, you know, princess is going to eat away at the crust in the bottom of the cholent, the bottom of the pot, but it smells so good, I really want it. So she has her servants bring it to her quietly. That's what Gemara says. She doesn't want to announce to the whole world, I'm eating the crusty stuff in the bottom of the cholent, but yet she wants to pick away at it, because she likes how it tastes. So Gemara says that's the comparison to Shema and Baruch Shem. You know, we're a little bit ashamed to say Baruch Shem, but we want to say it. So I never fully got the comparison. I don't have a good explanation necessarily of that mushroom, but the Gemara does seem to depict it as somewhat of a statement that we're ashamed to say it out loud, so we say it quietly. That's how the Gemara is depicting it. So everyone can think about the mushroom on their own and try to figure out what exactly this has to do with the cholen pot, the bottom of the pot. But whatever it is, it's telling there is some shame in saying that out loud, so we want to say it in a quiet way. So that's the idea of saying Baruch Shem and Bechashoy, saying it quietly. It's 10 o'clock here. It's late today. I think we'll stop with that for this week, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so next week, what I want to do, I want to go through Shema just a little more, just through the text, Shema, and give us a little deeper understanding of what it means, because it's something that we say so often, and I think a lot of us, we don't get the full message of what Shema is supposed to depict us, what's supposed to describe to us. So we'll try to go through it, I think, line by line. It's a good opportunity, because it is part of the halacha to understand what it means, and obviously there's a lot to gain from Shema. We'll do that next week.